Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Microphone. Now
and
I think we got it.
Okay,
there we
there
go.
Go.
Now I can hear you.
All right.
All right. We got a lot of interesting news and updates here. Updates on previous stories that we have covered. I want to make sure we can get that out of the way here first up and foremost, and that is the library case, update. But we're going to talk about coming up the latest attack on privacy by the federal government's whatever U.S. representatives or whoever it is that's sponsoring looks like an absolutely awful bill called the Stop CSAM Act. And we'll tell you what that stands for and what they're going to do here, according to the Electronic Frontier. Damn it, what does it stand for?
Frontier. Yeah.
Frontier Foundation. Did it used to be Freedom at one time and
no.
They changed it? Well, anyway.
I'm pretty sure it's always been Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, so we'll get into that coming up here in a little bit. But an update on the library case. Just moments before the show started, there was an update that came through the PACER system, which is the federal government's online court filing system. If you follow, there's a website called Court Listener and a handy little app called Recap, which is PACER spelled backwards. So if you are interested in following different court cases online, you have to get into Recap as a plugin for anybody that visits PACER. It'll download automatically what you pay, because you have to pay PACER,
oh, yeah,
10 cents a page or whatever, to look at court filings. So what Recap does is whenever you download a file from PACER, it uploads it to this Recap system, which is also known as courtlistener.com, and then they store it, and then they serve it up for free. So anybody who looks for that file after the first person with the app that downloads it, or the plugin for browsers like Chrome or Firefox, then they don't have to pay for it. So it's a pretty sweet thing if you ever get into the federal system. You can also just go to courtlistener.com and follow certain cases on there. And one of the ones I'm following is the SEC versus library. We've been following this case as closely as we can. You've been to a hearing, Chris. I've been to a hearing.
Absolutely.
You've been to more than one.
Yeah. Oh, I think it was all of them, if I'm not mistaken. There weren't that many.
Well, there have been a lot of filings, that's for sure.
Yeah, a lot of filings.
A lot of argumentation. And Library, unfortunately, has lost. For those that don't know, Library is a decentralized protocol. And remember, the difference between a protocol and a platform or a program is a protocol is a set of code that is sort of like open source. It's the lowest level that you can interact with on the Internet. So, for instance, HTTPS, that thing that you see in front of every web URL, the P in that stands for protocol. FTP, file transfer protocol. These are things that anyone who's writing a program can utilize said protocol to communicate with other people in some way. Am I describing this correctly so far? Okay, so Library is a media sharing protocol. It is a way for you to upload, could be a video, could be an MP3, could be a PDF file, could be something else. You upload it to the, actually host it from your server. You're not actually uploading it. You host it from your own computer, your laptop or your desktop computer or whatever, running the Library software, and then it is available. And what Library is a blockchain that helps index the different files that are available through this protocol. Okay, so Library allows a decentralized method of file sharing. The old ways of doing this would have been like you would put a torrent online that would host a certain file or movie or something like that. and then you'd have to put that torrent in certain centralized servers like the Pirate Bay that were always being targeted by governments of the world trying to take down these centralized servers hosting the torrents. Even though the servers weren't hosting the pirated files or whatever, they were still being targeted because they had the torrents that sort of pointed to those files. Library has a blockchain which is decentralized. It's a ledger that exists in thousands of locations all at once, just like kind of like Bitcoin, except with a different purpose. And it became somewhat popular. Like, it became this alternative to YouTube. And it's not per se for piracy. I just want to make that clear. There's a lot of original content on Library. Anyone can upload whatever they want to the service, though, and there's nothing that can be done to stop it because it is a protocol. It is not a platform. There's not a central manager who decides, this is okay, this is bad, this is okay, this is bad. They can't do that. There is no central control over it. And that is why the system hates Library. That is why YouTube, these big centralized video systems, the federal government likely, hate Library. And so they targeted the Library Foundation, or the Library Company. I guess there's two different organizations. So there's Library the Protocol. There's Library the Company, which has a board of directors and a CEO and all that.
There's an organization behind the protocol, and then there's another company called Library.
Correct. There's the Library Foundation, which is a non-profit or something like that. I'm not sure how it's organized. Then there's the company that had been doing some of the programming for Library. It had its founder, Jeremy Kaufman, who's a Free State Project early mover. He lives here in New Hampshire in the Manchester area. He's one of the board of directors, I think, at the Free State Project as we speak. So they targeted Library, and they being the federal government's SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, with their usual claim that when they came after Library, hadn't been claimed that many times, but since then, they brought this case against a bunch of different cryptocurrency companies.
It's interesting to say usual claim because it's something that there's all these different federal organizations, and they're all making sort of different claims, but a particular organization might be making the same claim repeatedly, but a lot of these claims, they didn't do it right away. They waited many, many years. Like in the Library right. case, I think it was 5 years before they brought a case.
Yep. And in this case, it is the claim that the Library token, which is the, if you will, the fuel that makes the system run. Whenever you upload a video, you have to spend a little bit of the Library coin, or what do they call it? Library token? I forget what they call it. Library coin, LBC, is what the code online acronym is. Anyway, the Library coin is the guts of the system. That's how the things sort of move. Whenever you make a change to a blockchain, you have to pay some small fee. It's a very, very small amount that you would have to pay. The SEC said this is a security. Now, a security is supposed to be something that gives you some kind of say, right?
Yeah,
like you got a stock, you can vote.
It's not really because
it's not.
Please,
yeah. Of course.
So, I mean, basically, you're not when you there are stocks, like you can own stock in Library, the company. Okay,
you could,
which is a
not
separate
anymore.
Entity, right? And the library coins, they're not stock in a company.
No, they don't give you voting rights.
I'm trying to think how they phrased it, or how you would phrase it. It's
you don't get dividends.
Yeah, right. There's no benefit to holding them. You know, beyond its utility
could go up in value.
It's utility. It's what they call a utility token.
Yeah. Basically, the federal government went after them because they said, well, you had some of these tokens because they started the company, right? Or they started the protocol. They had access to early mining, right? Like they had a bunch of tokens. They had, you know, millions of these Library coins, and they gave a bunch of them away. And the SEC said giving away tokens is illegal distribution of securities, whatever terminology they use for that. Not even selling them.
Even though there was never a promise, nobody ever suggested that, oh.
Apparently somebody somewhere suggested it.
Well, not Library, though. The only time that it happened sort of with Library was like in a private email between two individuals, like with one of the employees. It's absolutely crazy because it was never marketed that way by the company or by even Library, the nonprofit.
Right. But they came after him. And they said
didn't
it is
matter.
They said it's a security. Never ended up going to a jury. It was summary judgment, I think was the terminology, where essentially both sides agreed to the facts in the case, and it just ended up becoming a question of law, so they didn't go to a jury. It was decided by a judge here in New Hampshire at the federal district court, and that judge decided in favor of the SEC. So now they're in this stage of things where there's a penalty. Okay, so that this is the part of the final end. This is the very, you know, the end of the tunnel is within sight. Not that there's going to be anything after the tunnel.
So,
but,
so something to note here, too, is that this is a civil case that was brought by the SEC, not criminal.
Not criminal.
Yeah,
that's correct.
So it's a little bit different than the Crypto 6 case.
Yes, exactly. But what the SEC wants to do is destroy Library, and they've basically done it. There are no more employees. All there is left now is Jeremy Kaufman. He's the CEO. And they hit him at the very end of this case with a series of demands for more discovery. So as though they haven't been brutalized enough, the entire company has been shut down essentially at this point.
It's like a personal vendetta at this point against Jeremy Kaufman because the company's gone. It's already out of business.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much. There is no more business to be done with Library. No, they have no more money.
The employees were fired, as I understand it. There's nothing left financially.
They have no money. And in fact, the SEC in its filing today, in a four-page filing, a supplemental brief on remedies where they recommend to the court what they want the court to do. Right? And lawyers do this. They make a document. They say, here you go, judge. Just sign this piece of paper and we'll be good and all set. Here's what we think you should do. They want to extract a civil penalty of $111,614 from the library company. I don't know if they have any kind of money left to pay that, but that's what they want.
They've already revealed their assets, and it was like not even enough to pay employee salary for like a week.
They want an injunction that would restrain Library from violating the Securities Act because they claim that Library has not yet destroyed its Library coin holdings. And it has not yet, quote-unquote, dissolved the company. And they say Library has promised to do these things, but since they haven't done that yet, they need to be enjoined from violating the Securities Act, because in theory they could go crazy and start selling tokens again, right? Which they wouldn't obviously do, but that's what the SEC wants. They do make a point here of withdrawing their prior request for what they call disgorgement. And this is, as I understand it, disgorgement is like, how much money can we get out of these people?
Mm.
In addition to the penalty, right? So there's already the civil penalty that they want of $111,000. Disgorgement would be in addition to that what we can get. And they actually admit here in this filing that there's nothing to get.
Right.
That's the reason they're withdrawing the disgorgement is because Library has been completely destroyed as a company. It's over. So that's pretty much their proposal at this point. I mean, I'm boiling down the four pages here. And so the next step, I guess, will be for the judge to rule on this. And then presumably Library will shut down its operations as a company. But that doesn't mean that Library's future is terminated, right? Because the blockchain continues. The blockchain, as long as there's a couple people mining, as long as there's a couple people out there that support this chain, it will continue.
Mm.
And Odyssey is still out there. It's a very popular platform that was launched sort of based on Library. It's expanded to be more of a centralized service since then, but it does still have Library in the background.
One of the questions I am now asking myself is, they wanted to target both. Effectively, one of the things they were arguing is that they were targeting both, I guess, the foundation and the company, but that was sort of what their judgment, they were asking for a judgment on, I think. And they sort of wanted to include anybody and everybody, including any ventures that Jeremy Kaufman might start or anybody relating to Jeremy and Library, the company.
Was the foundation related to him or was that unrelated to him?
Well,
I don't know enough about it.
I just know that this was sort of argued, I believe, in the courtroom that effectively the government, SEC, wanted them to enjoin basically anybody connected to the Library from basically, like, starting it up again.
I know they wanted to go after Odyssey. I remember that part. I don't remember the details about the foundation. Anyway, there's nothing about the foundation in this filing, at least as far as what they want the judge to.
Okay, so it sounds like they've accepted that it's only going to be the company.
Seems like it.
Yeah.
Seems
okay.
Like it. Because they didn't ask to do anything to Odyssey. They didn't mention the foundation. Odyssey gets a mention in here, but not in the terms of we want to destroy Odyssey. At least that's not what I read here.
Maybe you can clarify something. The company, is that Odyssey? Because I thought Odyssey was
a separate company.
A separate company
Odyssey
from the
is,
foundation? Because I thought the Odyssey
no,
was
Odyssey
the company.
Came from the Library Corporation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, which is what's targeted here, right?
That's correct.
Okay. So,
but I guess Odyssey was spun off as its own separate corporation. At one time, it was a subsidiary.
Okay.
It no longer is.
Okay. All right. So there's now... Okay, so there's sort of three entities then. So there's yes. Library, the company,
yep.
Then there's a spinoff called Odyssey,
correct.
And then there is the foundation. Okay. So
that's
that correct. Makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to happen to the foundation here. I don't know if they have anything for the SEC to target anyway. I suspect if they did, they probably would be targeted in some way. But I just wanted to give you guys the update on that in case you've been curious about what's been happening with Library. You know, it's been a few months since they had their last court hearing, and court things don't move quickly. So that's the update. And we will, of course, keep you in the loop as that continues to develop. If there are any more hearings that we can attend, I'm sure that we will do so to follow up on this story because it is... As of right now, the latest loss for the cryptocurrency industry as far as the SEC targetings, we still have not gotten the word on what's going on with the Ripple lawsuit. That was the big one, right? Like, Library didn't get the same level of press attention within the crypto community as the Ripple lawsuit. So the SEC's been targeting Ripple, which is one of the top cryptos out there. And in that case, the judge has heard the arguments. And they're waiting on the judge's ruling in that case. So that's what's going on there.
I don't recall what the difference was in the defense, but I recall there being a different path that
I think they took. I don't either.
So it'll definitely be interesting to see what happens with that case.
Yep. A lot of eyes are on that case as well. It would be nice for the SEC to lose one, but these are federal judges. So
we'll see.
The odds that they're going to rule against their own guys are pretty low. Meanwhile, the SEC has continued to go after various different organizations. We saw them going after Bittrex recently, which was another cryptocurrency exchange that had announced that they were going to be shutting down their operations in the United States, and then literally within, I think, 24 to 48 hours of making that announcement, Bittrex was targeted by the SEC. And now, in a quick update on that story from Reuters, just a few days ago, Bittrex has now filed for bankruptcy on Monday this week, 3 weeks after the SEC accused it of operating an unregistered securities exchange. Bittrex ceased operations in the United States on April 30th and said its bankruptcy filing would not impact its global company, which serves customers outside of the United States. Its non-U.S. operations are based in Liechtenstein. And then it goes on to talk about their assets and all that stuff. So they claim that they have plenty of assets and that this was some sort of, I don't know, legal tactic. I don't know what all the details are on how big bankruptcies can protect companies in certain legal situations, but that's what they ultimately decided to do. So it's not good news. Obviously, they have no future in the United States. And speaking of companies that have no future in North America, Binance, which is the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange by volume and market cap, just announced today they're pulling out of Canada. So if you were a Binance user in Canada, you're done.
We hear about the United States a lot.
Same crap's going on up there.
It doesn't surprise me, but at the same time, it's interesting.
Yeah,
we hear so much about the U.S., but,
right.
You know, Canada.
Canada's been doing the same stuff. You know, we just don't hear about it as often because, you know, we're not in the thick of it up there. But they've been targeting crypto exchanges. Remember, I'm sure you remember during the trucker protests.
Oh, yeah.
They actually tried to outlaw. They used, like, an emergency order to outlaw certain Bitcoin addresses.
Yes.
Ordered all of the Bitcoin exchanges based in Canada to refuse to do business with anyone who is using those Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever addresses. So some exchanges in Canada have closed, but I'm not 100% certain on that. If you've been following that story of the Canadian situation closely and you want to give us an update on what's going on up there, because I think it's the same tactics, is to go after the crypto exchanges, scare as many people out of the business as possible, scare as many people out of the country as far as businesses, crypto businesses as possible, and just create a climate of fear surrounding cryptocurrency.
Fear and uncertainty, because yes. Businesses do not like fear and they don't like uncertainty.
Yep, exactly right. So we're going to continue to keep you up to date on this as it develops. Of course, if you want to weigh in, you can join the show. The number here is 603-283-6160. Let's see. I feel like I had another update. Oh, yeah. Since we're talking about the SEC, I mentioned this briefly last night, but we just didn't get a chance to talk about it. If you recall, Chris, I think it was on one of the shows you were on, we talked about how the SEC, after going after Library, after going after Ripple, after now threatening cryptocurrency exchanges, if you remember, they went after a cryptocurrency exchange because they were offering staking services.
Yeah.
And that was Kraken, one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges out there. Kraken said, we're just not going to fight this. We'll just pay $30 million and shut down our staking service. And we kind of explained, staking is this alternative to mining that allows people to stake their coins. They hold their coins in a special way that accrues interest. Basically, it accrues new coins into their wallet, and it helps them validate transactions in that blockchain. So it's a different way of kind of running a blockchain. And anyone can do staking with like a laptop or a desktop computer, but it's still a little complicated. You still have to run a full node of the software, and your average grandma may not be able to handle that kind of thing. But these online services would allow someone to just simply click a button and say, stake my coins, and then boom, done. And then they start earning coins because Kraken handled all the work for you. Well, they said that is an illegal security. And Kraken, again, doesn't agree, but they're not willing to fight it. Coinbase has apparently been accused of the same thing by the SEC, even though the case hasn't been brought quite yet. They've received what's called a Wells notice, and that's a notice from the SEC saying, we're going to sue you. We have to let you know that we're going to sue you, so we're going to sue you. This is what we're here. You go. And so that's coming, purportedly, and the belief is they're going to go after Coinbase for their staking service as well. And the thing that I predicted when we saw this news was, if they can go after staking and call staking a security, they're going to go after miners. Even though none of this stuff makes any sense as a security, they're just throwing it up against a wall, and they want to see if it sticks in front of a federal judge. That's what they're doing here. So now, guess what? They're going after a mining operation. And we're going to tell you more about that coming up here in a moment. The number is 603-283-6160. This may be the beginning of their latest round of attacks against the cryptocurrency industry, because it's probably not going to stop at just one company.
Definitely not.
603-283-6160 will tell you which company and what is supposedly going on here with the SEC's latest attack. And then coming up, we'll get into online privacy. It's under attack as well.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com, and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
You USA News Update. Heavy rain and flooding is coming to South Texas. It's making the flow of the Rio Grande deadly for illegal immigrants who are trying to cross.
We are going to have an increase in flow anywhere between 10 feet to 32 feet.
Assistant Fire Chief Rodolfo Cardona says the hail is also in the forecast for South Texas. That's dangerous to migrants who are processed and released by the Border Patrol. Former President Trump's taking a swipe at Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in a new ad. In a video posted online, Trump said the Florida Republican needs a personality transplant, referring to him as Ron DeSanctimonious. DeSantis has yet to officially jump in the race. Tesla owners are filing a class action lawsuit against the company claiming its automatic software updates deplete their car's batteries or even leave them not working at all. Dave Collins, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join the show here. You can bring up anything you want to discuss. And I do want to say thank you to listeners like Elephant in the Room, who is a Free Talk Live supporter of our AMPS program. AMPS stands for Advertise, Market, Promote, and Support. Elephant in the Room is a silver level supporter. And that means that Elephant in the Room is contributing $5 a month, which is what we ask. So we certainly appreciate it. It helps us advertise, market, promote, and support Free Talk Live to get the word out about the ideas of liberty, peace, privacy, cryptocurrency, some of the things we talk about a lot here on Free Talk Live, which we're going to get into privacy here in a little bit, and the latest attack on that. Kind of all of this is in a way, an attack on privacy, right? Because an attack on the cryptocurrency world is also an attack on privacy to some extent, even though a lot of these blockchains are public.
You know what it is? It's an attack on control and privacy. And the privacy thing, I don't even know. They almost haven't even started attacking that yet. Only a little bit in, like, looking at exchanges and being like, you better remove the privacy coins, but...
They've done that, too. Yeah, that's a good point. That was a little while back, years ago, that they... In fact, it was Bittrex, the very same company that just filed for bankruptcy, that they put some pressure on, I think, quietly. And then Bittrex... Yeah. Remember, Bittrex announced, must have been 5 years ago, oh, yeah, we're just going to get rid of Monero and Dash, and they, like, had this list of what they consider to be privacy coins and they dumped him out because they were scared of something.
Mm.
So, if you want to comment, you can join the show here. The number is 603-283-6160. We were talking about some updates of various different stories. Bittrex filing for bankruptcy, the library corporation being targeted by the SEC, and the penalty that the SEC wants, which is over $100,000. They gave up on their disgorgement, so-called, requests. So those is a quick recap for you. But what we were talking about is this attack against a Bitcoin miner, or at least the preface to an attack. So they have subpoenaed, according to theblock.co, which is one of the Bitcoin news sites, a company called Marathon Digital is a U.S.-based Bitcoin mining company. They said this week they have received a subpoena from the Securities and Exchange Commission regarding an ongoing investigation tied to a mining facility in Montana. According to its May 10th filing, the SEC, quote, may be investigating. Of course they're investigating. That's exactly why they're subpoenaing. They may be investigating whether or not there may have been any violation of the federal securities law, said the filing. Marathon says it's cooperating with the agency. They received an initial subpoena back in November of 2021. Quote, on October 6, 2020, the company entered into a series of agreements with multiple parties to design and build a data center for up to 100 megawatts in Hardin, Montana, which we used to be on the air there. In conjunction therewith, the company filed a current report on whatever form the firm said today that discloses that pursuant to a data facility services agreement, the company issued 6 million shares of restricted common stock in transactions exempt from registration under the Securities Act. The latest subpoena was received on April 10th. So I guess what they're suggesting here is that maybe their stock issuance was related to an unregistered security. Maybe. But it's awfully curious that they're going after a mining corporation here. So we don't know what the SEC's angle is on this yet. They're just saying, okay, give us all your papers. We want to see all your internal documents. We want to see, you know, your emails. Turn it over so we can find something to charge you with, is essentially what's going on here.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, so if you are a mining company in the United States, you should be on alert right now. This, if it's happening to Marathon Digital, we don't know what it is exactly. We just know an investigation is happening. You better believe they probably have their eyes on you as well. And I'm not saying you got to shut down, but
even if, you know, it's interesting, even if they are not targeting them for somehow mining being a security,
yeah,
you're legal stuff as far as your shares and issuances and how you operate the company is potentially going to be used against you if you're a mining corporation, because you're probably being targeted because you're a mining corporation, not necessarily because of the structure of your... They're just looking for something.
Sure, you know? Want something.
Yeah, and if they can't go after you for what you're doing, they're going to, you know, as far as the actual mining is concerned, they're going to go after you for something else. And
or
what
all
else
of the
there?
Above,
right?
You know, maybe they're
possibly
they're cooking up a huge case where they're going to come at it from different angles. But this is one to keep an eye on, that's for sure.
Well, we already know they're coming at it from different angles. I mean, you know, you've got every three-letter organization at the federal level trying to figure out how they can go after anybody connected to crypto.
So that's the update for you there. The number here, if you want to join us, 603-283-6160. It's not to say that individual miners have much to fear.
Probably not.
If you're just running a mining rig in your basement or wherever, then they probably don't know about it. You're too small fry for them to waste their time with. They want to get millions of dollars. You know, they're after the money. And they're after creating this
fear,
this aura of fear that's going to come over the entire industry and run people out of the United States. It's going to run entrepreneurs. It's going to run creative programmer types out of the United States to whatever the safer jurisdictions are for cryptocurrency. I don't know what those are, but they're out there. It's going to be smaller countries. I don't think El Salvador is a great place to go, but they're certainly talking about being a safer place for cryptocurrency there. Whether it be the St. Kitts and Nevis, which is welcoming a lot of Bitcoin Cash action down there, or some other country I haven't heard about yet. If you've heard about one and you want to weigh in, you can. Let's go to Ricky from the Commonwealth. He's calling us from Pennsylvania. Go ahead, Ricky.
Thank you there, Brother Ian. I love you. Brother Chris, good evening.
What's on your mind?
Well, this one's for Richard. Now, I'm going to be 30. Yeah, Richard, that wonderful caller that keeps calling about mental health background.
Oh, this is the guy that wants to do, he wants to put psychologists in charge of whether or not someone can buy a gun legally in the United States.
Yeah, the man's a comedian. Here's why. I'm going to be turning 50 December 25th of this year. Now, it took a while here in the Commonwealth for the FFL garbage to creep in and take over and, like, ruin everything. But here's how it was when I was a kid growing up. First of all, I had my dad's Remington 600 pump loaded in my hands at five. And at that time growing up, you know, during all the years of me growing up, you know, if you wanted to buy a gun, there was no background check. There was no ATF form. Here's things that were different. You could be crazy. You could be a felon. You could be a domestic abuser. Now, as far as youths, like if I would have wanted one, it would have been easy because the gun shop was at the end of the block where I grew up. You know, my dad, say at 10 years old, I wanted a Colt, like I ultimately got. All he would have to do was go to the gun shop, say to the gun shop owner, say, hey, my son would like to have a gun. Didn't give me permission. There you go. You can get a handgun. You know, things were really different then. And, you know, you didn't have all these problems and that. And this is what Richard don't understand. I don't know how old he is. You know, he says all his life he had a gun.
He sounds about your age.
Yeah, well, then he's a joker because the way it used to be is the way it should be. Our Section 21 was absolute then. The people have the right to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state. This shall not be questioned. Nobody questioned it. You know, when I was a kid growing in the house, you know, not only did I have my old man's shotgun in my hands, but there was other guns and rifles in the gun cabinet. The ammo was there. We had in the house in a specific place a loaded 25 caliber revolver. There's no problem. Everybody had guns. You know, there was not these issues. You know, what he doesn't understand is it's not the gun. Okay. It's the way it's being presented. I hate to say it by the Republicans and the NRA and all these guys in the gun lobby. They're glorifying a particular weapon and, you know, people are using that weapon. Unfortunately,
you know, this is nothing new. This is the government has been using the guise of safety to argue to take away your freedoms. It's not specifically guns. They've just been, you know, yes, they're focused on guns at the moment, but they've been doing it for hundreds of years. I mean, from driver's licenses that were actually started out of bigotry, not safety, as many want to try and suggest today. It was bigotry against motor vehicle drivers is how driver's license started. A vehicle registration.
It's unconstitutional. The driver's license is unconstitutional.
You can argue it's Supreme Court disagrees, but nonetheless.
Another story for another night.
It is, but it's, they keep going, and it got to a point where your safety belt, your seatbelt, right? Mandatory seatbelts, but it was only supposed to be utilized as a secondary, well, I don't know if I'm using the right words, but like a secondary offense where if they pulled you over for something else,
yeah,
you know, they couldn't pull you over for that, basically.
In Pennsylvania, we still have voluntary seatbelt laws. They can only hit the, they lie. The reality is the only thing they can do is give you a ticket for the driver, and they can't stop you for a seatbelt. They have to stop you for something else.
Okay.
They lied. It started at
the end. So you're saying passengers aren't obligated to wear a seatbelt in Pennsylvania?
Nope. They started this at the end of the Bush administration. I remember the Texas Rangers came in.
I think it's the motor vehicle operator who is responsible.
Everything. It's terrible. It's terrible. And it still hasn't changed. You know, like I said, we still have.
Well, as long as you live in a nanny state, nanny society, none of this stuff is going to change. And that's where that guy's coming from. Ricky, thanks for the call tonight. He's coming from that state of fear. Yep. And oh, my God, somebody's getting shot somewhere in the United States. There's a school that's been shot up, even though, of course, the school is a gun free zone. And so therefore, no one's allowed to have a gun to defend themselves, including the teachers or any other staff members who might be on that school campus, which is, of course, why those are the places that get targeted more often than anywhere else. Because even though the psychos who want to go and shoot someone to death are obviously crazy, that doesn't mean that they are stupid, right? Like, There may indeed be in the, like, if schools were allowed to actually have guns on campus and people could defend themselves against psychopaths, you may still have some psycho that shows up and tries to shoot. But some of them are going to think twice about their what they're doing.
You know, I mean, the one, I feel like there's a little bit of a bigger issue here, because I don't necessarily know, like, what percentage of these people are psychopaths, and what percentage of these people have just been abused by the system to such a point where they feel that the only way to resolve the issue is if the world just ended, right? Because it's, I don't know, like, it just seems like...
I think
like,
you have to be a psychopath to be willing to take somebody's life. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. I just think there is probably a little bit more nuance than that. But I think the better solution is to get rid of government schooling, not outlaw guns. Guns are, you know, I mean, a lot of these problems end up as a result of forcing people to do things they don't want.
To be fair, there was a shooting at a Christian school recently.
I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Yeah. I'm just saying that... You're still, and that could still be a situation somebody was forced to do something they didn't want.
Oh, right? Of course, a lot of these private schools are still set up like government schools. They have the classroom, the they have still, the grade levels.
They're still being forced to go to school, either by parents or the state.
Yep. Yeah, I think it was Jay Noon who was just talking about last night how he learned to read because he wanted to know how to fix, like, a motorbike that he'd purchased. And he had to, he got the manual for the motorbike, but he didn't know how to read it. So, like, that gave him the incentive to actually get people to help him learn how to read the manual. And he ended up learning how to read it, and he fixed the motorbike up, and he had himself not only the ability to read, but the ability to fix a motorbike as well.
Yeah.
So, like, that's an unschooling story, you know?
It's interesting because there's, like... There are some students, and this is the thing, it's like where education is sort of a good thing, if you try and force it down people's throats, they don't end up learning because they don't want to learn what you're teaching them. You have to teach people what they want to learn, and then, you know, it might be useful to them at some point. Mm-hmm. But if you just try and force people into this rigid system that teaches everybody the same thing, it just doesn't work, and you end up creating problems, you know, all sorts of problems. And the United States isn't, it's probably has gotten even worse over the decades, you know, with removals of things like shop class. And I'm not saying they should be teaching shop class in schools. I don't think they necessarily should. But the point that I'm making is that if you have a system that it's everybody's geared, say, for college, when you know these kids, a lot of these kids are never going to go to college. It's just they don't have the abilities
to
attend college. And so if you force them in that direction and they never get the opportunity to, you know, go in a different direction, what do you think is going to happen? You're going to end up with school shootings. You're going to end up with things that, yeah, they probably shouldn't happen. And as you say, psychopaths, but, you know, I don't want to say I'm not, but the government or the people who support the state, you know, they're pushing kids down that path.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. And I think your solution is the best possible solution is to end the idea of government schools. If you want to send your kid to some classroom environment where everybody's tiered off by grade level, then those will exist in the private education system. I think that's probably the worst possible plan if you've got a child that you care about. Like, whether it's at a government school or a private school, obviously private schools are better at doing it, but still that whole kind of stratified tiered system, I don't think it's good. I don't think it's good for a young person's development. I like the idea of unschooling where somebody can just teach, you know, go learn the things they want to learn on their own time and at their own volition. We've seen that works really, really well. Some people that want to see more curriculum or more handholding, you can do homeschooling where you decide what the curriculum is with your kids, that kind of thing. I think both of those systems have been proven to work really well. It's the homeschool kids. They always win the spelling bees.
What,
you know?
What we need is more a more diversified set of solutions.
And you would get that from a free market in education.
Right.
There weren't billions upon billions of dollars being funneled into this one-size-fits-all, crap-can government system, then you would have, I think the expression is, 1,000 flowers blooming, right? There would be so many different types of schools. You could have the exact kind of education you want instead of fighting over with other parents over, we need sex ed, we hate sex ed, we need the Bible, we hate the Bible, right? Like, there's always been this struggle over what should be and shouldn't be the curriculum. They're fighting over books in the library right now. over what isn't and isn't an appropriate book to be in a library. How about this? How about the people that want to have books about sex in their school library? They have their own school. They get to decide what's in their school library. And the conservative types that want to have the Bible and, you know, their whatever conservative books that they want to have their kids read, they can have their own school. The atheists can have their own school, right? Like, all of these things can be true if we were to just allow the market to work.
The humorous part about it is most parents wouldn't care either way. So
you don't think?
I don't think so. And I think at the end of the day, what you'd find is that you'd have, you know, some schools that were conservative, sure, mm-hmm. and didn't have that. But I don't necessarily think that. I suspect that most of the schools would still
be secular. You think?
Yeah, I think it would be secular.
Might be right.
I mean, I'm not saying that there's not, like, there's certainly a lot of more religious fervor, I guess, in certain parts of the country. And you probably see more Christian schools in certain parts of the country, or religious schools in general. But I suspect, a lot of the cities, a lot of other parts, you would see more secular.
That's what we want to see. We want to see different choices, different options. I mean, even in a city, you'd probably find religious schools.
There's lots of churches. There's a lot of private schools run by religious entities in the cities for, you know, probably tending to be a more wealthier clientele or a customer. I don't know how to phrase that, but
scholarships for those places for poor people.
They do.
And that's, of course, the answer. You know, inevitably the question comes up, what about the poor? You libertarians, you just want to leave the poor behind. It's like, no, actually, there have been studies done, and I forget if it was like India. I think it was Dr. Mary Ruart, who wrote the book Healing Our World. If I recall correctly, she cites one of these studies in her book where they looked at private school options and specifically looking at the question of, is this affordable? Can, like, the poorest of the poor people in India, right, like people who are barely eking out a living in some cases, can they afford to go to, you know, a private school? And the answer was, well, if they couldn't afford it, there were literally hundreds or thousands of scholarships for schools available from some of the wealthier Indian people who wanted to make sure that the poorest people would still get an education. So, yes, the answer was yes, they could afford it with some help, and that's okay.
You know what's interesting, actually, is if you start looking at, like, college, okay, if you take this at the college level in the United States, mm-hmm. what you'll notice is that the kids who get the grants, they're going to private, or the, how do I say this? I probably need to rephrase this a little bit, but if you go to a private school, you're way, way more, even though it's a higher cost, you're way more likely to get grant money.
Hmm.
Whereas if you go to a government school,
why is that?
You're less likely to get grant money.
But why?
I don't have an answer for you exactly, but I just know that's the case. So it's kind of like when you're looking at, like, costs of private education at the college mm-hmm. level, the price is higher, but in reality, by the time you get done paying for it, it's probably not, at least not, there's not the disparity that it appears on paper.
Well, plus, it's a terrible idea to look at colleges when we're talking about what schools could cost, right? Because colleges have seen prices go up over the years instead of going down. Like, normally in a free market, we expect prices to go down, competition, you know, service is going to go up.
But that's sort of actually a good reason to talk about it.
Well, we should talk about why colleges are not a good example to look at pricing, because they are guaranteed to get the funding they want to get by the federal government, who provides the majority of the loans, like the supermajority, the lion's share of college loans. So basically the colleges know, hey, we can increase the pay for all these teachers. We can increase we want to build some more buildings. Like, whatever the thing is that they want to do to increase the tuition that they're charging, they know they're going to get it. It's not like they're competing against the other colleges to bring prices down. There is no such competition. And plus, most of the colleges are state operations to begin with.
Yep.
So it's like, this is not a free market. College is not a free market or anything close to a free market. You can look at actual private schools today, and I was shocked to learn this, but there's actually a significant number of them that are cheaper than the government schools, like government high school. And the perfect example of this is Croydon, New Hampshire, where there was a school board meeting last year And this has made a lot of news. It was actually the focus of one of the two of the episodes of the NBC Boston documentary series about the Free State Project, where the Croydon School Board at the town meeting that they had had townsfolk come in with one Free Stater who said, let's cut the budget by 50% and take it from $20,000 per pupil to $10,000. And his justification was, look at the scores, the test scores over the last few decades are terrible. They haven't gotten better, but the funding has gone through the roof. He says, the proposal was to cut it to like 1990s funding levels, around $10,000.
Wasn't that the average? Like the average in New Hampshire or something like that?
No, that's, I think, below. I think that's below.
Below the average in terms of
I think it's probably like 15 or something in New Hampshire, somewhere in that range. But anyway, the thing that he, one of the points he made that was so persuasive, besides showing the chart of more money doesn't mean better results,
sure.
He also showed what the private schools in the area charge, and $10,000 per pupil is still more than what the private schools, who are actually getting good results for their students, are charging. It's like the private schools were like $8,000 or $9,000. So he's like, the argument was, we're still proposing to spend more than what the private schools are spending. And they actually passed it at the town meeting, but then all of the statists took hold of it, and they got pissed, and they undid it.
Do you know what's interesting is I did a little bit of math, and if you take into account inflation, this is a number that just shocked me when I did the math. 1960s, like if you took into account inflation, it would be about $2,000 per student compared to about $20,000 in New Hampshire. In terms of how much it's gone up. So
hold on. So you're saying if you account for inflation,
yes,
in today's dollars, what they were spending in 1960 at a government school was the equivalent of $2,000 today's dollars?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And,
wow.
And we have $20,000 going to per student at today's school. So we're talking about 20 times as much.
And I think most people would tell you that the government schools were better back then, too, than they
were. Yeah, I don't know if they were better, but I can certainly tell you it's absolutely insane the amount of money
that
we're being forced to pay for bad government schools.
Yep. Yeah, up here it's like 60 to 70% of the property tax bill.
Yeah.
I mean, if you could get rid of government schools, your property taxes at least would come down. If you're in New Hampshire, for instance, your property taxes would be a fraction. It'd be like, nothing.
About half what you're paying now.
Yeah, it'd be less than half. You'd look at it and be like, oh, yeah, it's not so bad. But with the government schools in there, it's crazy. There's more coming up here. The number is 603-283-6160. That's not to say there isn't a ton of other government waste that can be dealt with. And that's, of course, some of the things that the Free State Project is trying to do here in New Hampshire. We'll continue here in moments. We'll get into the privacy issue and the latest federal attack on your privacy coming up.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com.
or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.